Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cos podcast. I'm Matt Cos. That's Bob Mackowitz. We will get to all things Maple Leafs, who by some miracle, they won the draft lottery. But Bob, I've got to start here. Your reaction to, and I want you to explain it, what your daughter did. She scared you as you were coming into your house. She was a 2 out of 10 on the fearo factor in terms of how hard she was trying to scare you. And you jumped out like it was a 10 out of 10. It is a hilarious video. Thank you for sending it to me.
All right, a little brief explanation here. So it's about 4:30, which is around the time when Cece gets home from school. This is yesterday. I went and took the dog out to the yard to do her business. And what I didn't notice is that Cece went into the house. She went in behind me and I didn't notice her. She noticed I didn't notice her. So she sets up her camera, hides behind a door frame. I walk in and she jumps out and goes,
boo.
It was about that loud. Now, yeah. I don't know why I reacted the way I did, but I let out this gasp and then I fell to the floor. I said in the video, I said, Matt, you can just see her going, Dad, are you okay? Are you okay?
Oh, yeah. She was worried she got her old man a heart attack. You reacted like it was Leatherface with the chainsaw going. It is hilarious video. Very cute.
You know, Matthew, you've been my friend for a long time.
That's right.
Just the first time you've ever seen me overreact.
I mean, not today, you know. So.
She said something really funny. She goes, Dad, you went down like Catherine O'Hara in Home Alone 2 when she realizes she left Kevin at home for the second time.
Wow. Great pull by her.
Saved her a week, I'll tell you that.
Are you ready for a professional radio segue?
Yeah.
Speaking of being shocked, that was all Toronto Maple Leaf fans last night at around 7:20 p.m., where the odds for them getting the first pick went from like 9% to 4.5% to holy shit, we did it, Naylor. The Leafs got the number one pick in the draft. That was a crazy moment for Toronto sports fans.
I can't believe what I just saw. And not just the fact that they had an 8% chance of it happening, which is very small, not inconsequential, but small. But on the heels of the press conference and the general vibe around the team, people were tarring up their torches and getting their pitchforks ready to go down to Scotiabank. And then what happens? They get the first overall pick. They did it, Naylor.
There's still so much to get into here. I put together a list of the winners of the NHL draft lottery. But I think the first thing we start with, what were we going to say?
Well, I was going to say something I think, you know what it reminded me of? How you like to tell the story of the Christmas ceasefire during World War I. How, for whatever reason, Christmas Day, both sides decided they were just going to not fight. And they didn't. And that's how it felt waking up this morning. I was so angry at the Leafs. And then they got the first overall pick. And it was like, you know what? At least for today, let's just open presents and drink eggnog.
Let's go there, Bob. It's one of my main thoughts. Leaf fans, they have not had a win. They've not had a reason to feel good since when they beat Colorado and they were on a 3-game winning streak, and that was in mid-January. The Olympics happen. The team is horrible. Then they win a couple games when they want them to lose. Two horrible press conferences, everything with maybe what's going to happen with Austin Matthews. I'm just happy for Leaf fans that they got to be happy, they got to cheer, and at the very least, for the next little while, you can look at mock drafts, look at Gavin McKenna highlights, maybe wonder about trading down. Like, at the very least, Leaf fans get to engage in sports happy, and it's been a while.
It's a great way to put it. It is engaging in sports happy. And I think you're being generous with the last time Leafs fans could feel good was back to the Colorado win. I think it's been years. You've got a captain who doesn't know if he wants to be here. Greatest Leaf in history. He doesn't know if he wants to be a Leaf. You've got a coach that everyone in the hockey world says did a shitty job. Everyone except for his buddies inside the organization who seem happy to bring him back. Then we can't decide. Is this just a, like an old boys club thing that we know MLSE is capable of? Or is it that they don't want to pay him out and they're being cheap, which MLSE is capable of? There's just been a lot of frustration. And for whatever reason, if it's like one of those moments in like the story of a saint when they have some kind of religious conversion. If you didn't believe in the hockey gods, it was hard not to believe in them as a Leafs fan last night.
Yeah, you could certainly draw parallels to the Book of Job with being a Leafs fan.
I don't know how the Book of Job ends, Matt, but like God comes down out of the whirlwind and says, hey, Job, shut up.
My analogy is pretty extreme, but you also just made mention of, trench warfare in the First World War. So we're both guilty of it a little bit today.
Yeah, it's pretty hard to be a Leafs fan. I'm not saying it's warranted, but I'm not saying it's not warranted. You got winners and losers. Okay, so the Leafs fans last night, 100%. The biggest winner is no question.
The biggest winner. Second biggest, we owe an apology. If I had known that Keith Pelly and John Chayka had devised a plan to win the draft lottery, that Operation Win Draft Lottery, that was their strategy. If they had told us that ages ago, there wouldn't be 7 articles in The Athletic ripping the shit out of this organization. Good job, Leafs executives, for deciding we should win the draft lottery. Aces.
I wonder if there was a cold ping pong ball.
It was my opening thought yesterday was Gary Bettman, you better rig the draft for the Maple Leafs. And Gary was listening to me.
The word rigged was trending on Twitter within about 15 seconds.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I'm not conspiracy minded, but if I were to think that there was a conspiracy here, if you explain it to me, I'd buy it. I'd buy it. Sure. Everyone would.
The only pushback is Edmonton, small market, got 3 first round picks in a row. The last 2 years, San Jose and the Islanders jumping up 9 spots. Those aren't the sexiest of teams.
I just mean last night.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I get it. I totally get the idea that that the draft was rigged. It made it even more fun because you had Calgary, Winnipeg, and Vancouver fans all going, what? Fuck you.
Poor Vancouver. They've never gone up in the draft. They've only ever gone down. Poor Vancouver. They're going to get a really good player. But as someone said, the top 2 picks are generational talents, and then you've got about 6 or 7 players between 3 and 10 who are all pretty much the same and all good, not great.
And the prospect pool now looks better, but getting back to the original point, at least for a day, John Chayka, who's now going to be on overdrive this afternoon, it's a much easier interview to do after that. And Keith Pelly can now just sort of go off into the background, God willing, but they get a day where no one's shitting on the executives.
Okay, so let's do a back and forth on winners and losers. Winner was obviously Keith, because the narrative has just flopped entirely from how shitty is your organization to what can you do with this exciting new asset you have. But also, I've been pretty hard on Keith, I think, mostly for his performance, but also hard and I hope equally shocked, because I've tried to really maintain, like, I'm a huge fan of this guy, just personally. He's been great to me in my life, but also intellectually. He's one of the most interesting, creative people I ever worked for. And that hasn't been coming through in this job. And I don't know if that's the Overlook Hotel effect of MLSE. I don't know if that's the experience of being Europe and becoming super corporate. But the Keith I know is one of the best at playing offense. I think we've seen he was not comfortable playing defense. As the team was losing, he just didn't really know how to communicate to people something, or even think in a way that was appropriate to the moment. So it seems. But the Keith we know is great at playing offense. And now he finally has a little bit of daylight in front of him. It's like he caught a block and now he's in the second deck and he's got the ball. Okay, now how far can he take it?
They went from having the, hey, everyone, are you excited for pick 39 to now obtaining an incredible asset that could be used to, I don't know if they do it, but at the very least, to trade and get a ton of ready now players, or the other issue with the team, not enough prospects, not enough high-end talent in the pipeline, that immediately gets such a massive boost over a lucky ping pong ball. Just so lucky.
It's just one guy. It's a team game. However, that one guy seems to be comparable to Patrick Kane or Kucherov. So a pretty good guy to have.
Yeah.
All right. So we're doing winners and losers here. We've done a couple winners. We did the losers of the Vancouver Canucks. Anybody else you got?
Other losers, I would say, well, first off, the rest of Canada, because they also jumped Calgary. Winnipeg didn't leap over. And also, more of a bigger picture thing, Bob, four of the top seven teams with the best odds to win the draft lottery are Canadian teams. Canada has seven of the 32 teams in the NHL. Four had the top seven chances of winning the number one pick. Another got swept from the playoffs. Another got eliminated in six. And now we're all rooting for Montreal. One of the losers, the draft lottery is a reminder. Not a great time now for the Canadian NHL franchises.
And yet, if the Leafs are good, it's the rising tide that floats all boats.
Mm-hmm.
And you've said that you were hoping for Montreal to do well because you just wanted a good Canadian success story so there wasn't this stink around coming to Canada and playing. Like, look, when it's good, it can be a lot of fun. Don't you want to be a part of that? There's been so few examples of that lately. And if this happens with the Leafs, it's bad today for the rest of Canada, but if the Leafs are rocking, the rising tide floats all boats.
Correct.
You know, Merrick said something interesting on his pod the other day, or maybe he was guesting on someone else's, but he said...
Wait. Merrick said something interesting? He broke his streak, his Cal Ripken-esque streak of never saying anything interesting or intelligent. Congratulations, Jeff. What did he say, Bob?
And I just got to be there for it, which was so exciting. He said, lots of guys would want to play in Toronto. Maybe they don't want to play for the Leafs.
Right.
And there's that sense of organizational dysfunction that maybe people are wary of. And that only makes sense. I think he's saying what we all know, which is when teams look like they're not organized internally, good players who have options, you know, that's they've only got like a 10-year window if they're lucky, to make all the cash they can and do all the winning they can. You know, why would you want to go to a sinking ship? Like, who says right now, oh man, I wish I could get hired by the Yellow Pages.
Ooh, this is much better than my job when I was shoveling coal into the train. This Yellow Pages thing, that's never going to go away anywhere. You know
what? Video, buy me as many stocks as you can, Mr. Broker.
Man, we could do this all day. But it's also it's like getting the number one overall pick. Now your travel brochure looks a little bit better. You know, it's like, hey, do you want to go visit here? And you're like, I don't know. The weather looks bad and this and that. And then someone's like, yeah, but we've got a new gastropub. You know, and it's like, oh, maybe I do want to go visit there. That's kind of what getting the number one overall pick does.
Can I say something about the gastropub?
It's heinous, such a lie.
Why is it's always pub food at the gastro pub. Steak fries, burgers. What's special about that? Like, isn't it just beer and burgers?
Here's what it is, Bob, and you set me up for it. Pub has steak and fries. A gastro pub has steak frites. That's the difference.
You know, I'm sure as a wine bar snob, you probably look at the gastro pub and you just look down on it.
Okay, I'm going to do this in under 30 seconds.
I doubt it, but okay.
Fuck all of you places that say you're a wine bar and you've got three whites, three reds, one rosé, maybe a sparkling. The sparkling's a shitty Prosecco. One of the whites is a mass-produced New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc, and you don't change your list. Don't say you're a wine bar if you've got seven or eight wines by the glass and it never changes. I know, Bob, I'm not alone with this passion.
No, I feel as strongly about it as you do. I remember being out on the East Coast in Halifax, and we went to a seafood bar, and they have all the local catch, like the fresh catch of oysters for the day. Here's what you can have. And you know the next day it's going to be different. And that was fucking great. Honestly, that's so... And then you're just sampling different things, and You know, you get the big tray and two of each kind. Oh, it's the best.
This is a dark line by me, Bob.
Go for it.
When I'm eating crab on the East Coast, I want to know there's at least a 15% chance that this crab was found right after John C. Reilly and George Clooney perished in the sea. That's the crab I want to know, that maybe this is the one where a Wahlberg died in the ocean bringing me my crustaceans.
You can see you chopping on your crab like, ooh, morbid.
Oh, ooh, this tastes like widowed. Oh, that's evil. Oh, I'm sorry. Well,
you know
that's
what? Mean. I knew if I gave you enough rope, you'd go there.
Jesus Christ. I'm sorry.
Couple things here, you know, Matt, trying to rescue this from hell. What if somebody in the organization says, we want Ivar Stenberg? Who's going to listen to that person? Like, and I was thinking specifically, how much power does Mats have? Because one thing we know Mats has been watching is Swedish hockey. Mm. I haven't heard him talk about this. But what if he says, hey, I watch this kid. I love him. We got to draft him. Is anyone going to listen to him? Like, how much power does Matt really have in the room now?
It's a great question. No, it's a great question because there is a debate that Gavin McKenna isn't necessarily the consensus number one overall pick, that it is these two guys. And you make up a great point of linking Mats Sundin with Sweden and how much does he know about him. Side note, nurses are the true heroes, pay the teachers. But it will. I need to get some karma points after what I did 3 minutes ago. But like, I just hope for this, that all the management, all the Rogers and the Pellys of the world just go full Homer Simpson into the bush and tell the scouts, all right, guys, whatever you decide, we're fine with.
It's a perfect time for that because it's a harder decision to fuck up. And their instinct, like say it was the fifth pick, you could see, oh, maybe they're all going to get involved or whatever. But really, like you could pick one of two guys and people say they're both great. Between McKenna and Sandberg. You know, it's interesting. I was thinking they're actually, now here's the bigger question, and management will be involved in this because now legitimately with the number one pick, there are two paths you can credibly go down. One is the, do we build the best line in hockey around a great young winger, Austin Matthews, and then on the free agent market or through trade, you go out and find some big forward who can get pucks out of corners. And you might wind up with the best line in hockey and something you can build around and sell jerseys and be exciting. Is it enough to win it all? I don't know, but it'll be exciting to watch. Or option number two, now you actually have a legitimate face of the franchise. And part of the fear of losing Matthews wasn't just, you know, the team's going to take a long time to recover from that. But that you've kind of lost the face of your franchise and maybe you just don't have an identity. And if you're an organization, that's a tough purgatory to get out of. Maybe this expedites a real rebuild because before it wasn't realistic because there were no options. Now you got a pretty big guy to build around, you know, like we did with Matthews 10 years ago. So I think that the debate about what the Leafs should do, it feels like it's, everyone's like, oh, this is proof they shouldn't rebuild. I don't know. I don't know if it's proof of that.
The one obvious easy pushback about why you can't do a rebuild is they don't have a first-round pick near next year or the year after. And let's face it, the Colorado pick ain't going to be great. But to your point, if you, you know, if you move, if you trade the number one pick to bring in veteran stuff, are you doing that because you're afraid Austin Matthews is going to leave and you need to appease him? That's the number one thing you can't do. If you draft McKenna, number one, and by the way, everyone trying to do, oh, this is the next Marner. Let's all just calm down. Let's everyone take a big sip of calm down juice. But if you draft McKenna, is that a sign that Matthews is okay with not only staying, but signing another extension?
And maybe he doesn't need to be the best player when that extension kicks in after this one, because McKenna by then all of a sudden is in his mid-20s and ideally is an offensive force. You know, this whole negotiation with Matthews, that may have been the biggest change last night. Before it was basically your hands were up in the air and you were being, it was like a heist. Okay, Austin, what do you want? Just don't leave, whatever you do. Now it's become a bit more like the opening of Temple of Doom with the Lazy Susan.
Yep.
Indiana Jones and the other guys are like spinning it back and forth. It's like, okay, McKenna, spin the wheel over to Matthew's side. Okay, Los Angeles Kings. Swings back over the Leafs.
It's a great movie analogy. Also, it doesn't get the credit because there's things about Temple of Doom people don't like now. I get it. But that opening is so, so good. Getting to Matthews, the only thing that I kind of have a little problem with, I understand, like, Matthews has fulfilled so much of his duties to this organization from his four-goal game. He's won a heart. He's won the Rocket, I think, three times. And we don't know if this is all true. They're reporting for Chris Johnston. But the idea of Matthews going, you need to prove to me that you can get the job done. He's the right to do it, as you mentioned. Careers are short. And the Leafs the last year have certainly had a lazy Susan of fuck-ups. But does he not owe the organization something himself, considering they gave him all the money, but also they gave him all the term that he has asked for? The last 2 years, he hasn't produced. A lot of that's on Berube. But also, he doesn't score a lot of goals in elimination games in the playoffs. And if Matthews produced in the playoffs the way he did in the regular season, the narrative might be completely different. It's a long way of me saying, Bob, and I'm sorry for being long-winded on this, but doesn't the team owes Matthews a bunch? No diggity doubt. But what does Austin Matthews owe to the Maple Leafs organization?
It's a good question, and I think we need to remind ourselves this isn't a new problem, because even Matt Sundin himself, who is supposed to be Mr. Leaf and the example of, I'll die for the blue and white, when his career was winding up, he was problematic to trade.
Yeah.
And he didn't really do the team any favors. So this idea that our greatest heroes are always heroes, I think Wendell was pretty much unimpeachable as a Leaf.
Correct.
But Doug Gilmore was here too short a time to call him unimpeachable. But in our lifetimes, it's not like we've had a Mr. Leaf to really hang our hats on, except for Wendell Clark. Like, and someone who from beginning to the end was, yes, just our guy.
Yeah. And one little thing, Matt Sundin never got a winger as good as Mitch Marner. Matthews was always blessed with a more talented winger than Matt Sundin ever had during his tenure here.
I've often said on this pod that Matthews reminds me of Vlad Guerrero, in that he'll be, inevitably one of the most talented people to ever play for your organization. But there's just something missing in terms of, why doesn't he seem to be obsessed with winning here more? And I don't know how fair that is or unfair or whatever, but just when we heard from Chris Johnston in his reporting that Matthews is taking his time and thinking about it, intellectually, we all know, completely reasonable. Emotionally, we're like, well, my mom and dad never say we'll decide whether or not we should raise you. Like, there just feels like there's a level of commitment. I mean, maybe that's a silly analogy, but you know what I'm saying? There's a symbolic level that guy's love for this city has never hit. We know there's a delta there.
Yes. And by the way, if Austin Matthews in one of his 9 playoff years did what Vlad did last year, the Leafs have made at least one cup final.
I watch people around the league defend Scotty Barnes. I'm going somewhere with this. Yep. Like, I was just watching a clip of Kevin Garnett saying that guy doesn't get the credit he deserves. And we understand that part of the reason the league doesn't understand how great Scotty Barnes is just because he's playing in Toronto and nobody pays attention, right? And he needs experts to champion him, whether it's Zach Lowe or Kevin Garnett or whoever. When people talk about how Toronto is a tough market and a shitty market, don't you just kind of want Austin Matthews to go on full defensive and be like, I'll fight anyone who says that about this town? And then he has the biggest microphone in the entire hockey world to say, you are all wrong. This place is amazing. I love it here. Best fans, amazing organization. And he doesn't really do that. He doesn't really do that. Like, we're just kind of waiting for him to say, and this is as fans. It's like, wait a minute, this is our organization. This is our city. Like, you are our avatar. You're our, metaphorically speaking, the champion of this place. Why aren't you defending us when everyone's lining up to take a shot at us? In fact, what you're actually doing is saying, I'm going to sit back and see if I just agree with all the critics.
Yeah.
And it's fair, but don't ask me to love you then.
Well, it's hard. Like, Matthews, everyone does the same platitudes. Best fans in the world, most passionate, yada, yada, yada.
it because he's not a, like he's not out there. Would you ever describe Austin Matthews as a rabid defender of the Leafs and Toronto?
Absolutely not.
You know, Mitch Marner, our second best player, was like, oh God, it's so hard to play there. I can't wait for this contract to end. Like these guys, it's not just the lack of success on the ice. Like even Tavares, because he's pretty laconic in his ways. Like he's supposed to be Mr. Leaf and he barely says boo. Like who the fuck is standing up for this team and its total shit kicking and reputation?
No one has. It would be great if once Matthews goes, you know what? I hear what Spittin' Chicklets or Brad Marchand or anyone is saying, but you know what? I love the level of intensity and passion. I wish the rest of the NHL was like this. In fact, I wish the American markets treated hockey the way they treat their local NFL or basketball team. I'm fine with the lunatics. I understand there's a portion of social media that is evil and horrible and poisonous, but that's part of our life today. I want to be here. I want to win here because to do it here is bigger than anywhere else. I'm all in.
You know where you really saw this was when it was time to play Mitch in Vegas again. And then when Mitch came here, right?
Yeah.
And a perfect opportunity to be the spokesperson for the fans. The perfect opportunity. But instead, they were all like, I don't want to talk about it. You know, you guys make a big deal out of all this. Well, we make a big deal out of all this because it's a big deal to people. And you're unwilling to take that onto your shoulders. So look, is he a good player? Yeah. Is he an excellent player? When he's healthy, he is. But none of us are surprised. And that's why, to go back to the draft lottery, I don't know who McKenna's going to be. But there's a chance that he might be something more than Matthews has been. And I'm not just talking as a player. I mean someone who is going to represent this city. It feels like the administration there isn't doing it. It feels like the coach is half in, half out. He seems more mad at everything all the time and feeling like nobody, you know, it's about him and he's not getting his due. Like, I don't know who's repping the fans right now. I think that's why Steve Simmons, everyone applauded Steve Simmons because it was like, finally someone said, hey guys, this is fucking bullshit.
Yeah.
Which is what everyone feels and no one wants to say.
It has been. It's been a total shit show for ages. But at least last night, there was joy in Mudville. And, you know, so you get the emotional component and you get the hockey component of options. You now have options. You now have this massive asset that you didn't have. And think about the swing. You know, at one point it went down to under 5%. We're sitting here staring at the Boston Bruins getting pick 8 and the Maple Leafs not picking till 39. Like, that was such a wild swing for everyone. It was great theater. And you know, by the way, Bob, another winner last night, the sanctity of the regular season of the NHL. The Leafs were the fifth worst team. They're picking number one. The Sharks were 4 points from making the playoffs. They were the 11th worst team. They're picking number two. You can't tank in hockey as much because it's under 50% of the time. The team with the worst record, more than 50% of the time, they don't get to pick number one. So at the very least, if I was looking for other winners, the sanctity of the regular season, because last night, you know, like last year, the Islanders moved up 9 spots. Washington Wizard, Brooklyn Nets, Utah Jazz, level of tanking, it doesn't bear fruit in the NHL.
Okay. Well, since you kind of opened the door to talk basketball, we've given short shrift to the Raptors, who lost in 7 of the Cavs. We haven't really even talked about it. Now we're kind of looking at where do they go next, because they feel like they overperformed and have shown us how good they can be, and how good they can be is they can push good teams but not beat them. That's about who they are right now. Do you have any top line thoughts on just the series? What do you do next? All of it.
What do you do next? I am comfortable with internal development. Shout out 2025 Blue Jays. What if Scotty Barnes gets 5% better? Not what Darko says. Oh, he's only 60% of the way there. Calm down. And if Colin Murray Boyles takes a jump and Jacoby Walter, you know, there is a path for the Raptors to become a legitimate second round playoff team. The other good thing, though, is now that we've seen Colin Murray Boyles and Jacoby Walter was good, not great, but he was good. He took a jump from year one to year two, and they have all their draft picks. At the very least, there is a path for the Raptors to be aggressive if there is a trading partner out there, because the Leafs have, or the Leafs, the Raptors have legitimate assets. So there's two clear paths that Toronto can take in this offseason.
I feel like if they're going to move somebody, it should be Ingram. And I know that seems kind of crazy considering they brought him in as the piece that was supposed to really hold this thing together. But I did a little digging into the underneath the surface numbers. And most importantly, the key trio in terms of positive net rating when they're on the court, on the floor together, is Scotty, is RJ, and is Emmanuel Quickly. Mm-hmm. That, statistically speaking, is actually the offensive core of this team. They're not bad when Ingram is out there, but they drop. And that's partially because it's net rating and it's defense. He's not great. But also, there's something just about spacing and how the ball moves that when you've got RJ, Scotty, and Emmanuel Quickly out there, that's when they're functioning their best. I think that you've burnished the reputation of Ingram enough that you could probably get something decent. He's an all-star level player and he was healthy. I don't know if I would do that necessarily, because to your point, I kind of want to see how they look as some of these young guys get better. I think next year is just a what do we really have kind of year. I don't think we really know yet, because the young guys have shown they can be better.
Next year was up till the second half of game seven. Was that a legitimate building block of future positive? Was it at all a mirage? Was it a nice moment of time, or was it a moment that could define who they're going to be? And I think that's what next year is going to be. Put it this way, Bob, I'm not going to yell and scream on air if the Raptors, you know, don't do much. I mean, beyond someone going, oh, no, you could have got Giannis for a song. I'm like, oh, okay. But, you know, like, and just use it as an example. I'm okay with this team just going on the edges and have faith that Scotty can get better, Walter can get better, Colin Murray Boyles can get better, and see what you got in a year from now.
The player of the year last year, to watch, I mean, was Brandon Ingram. Who's he going to be? How's he going to fit in? What can he give? I think this is now flipping to Emmanuel Quickly, because the statistics suggest they are much better when he's healthy and out there. And even just watching them against Cleveland, Jamal Shedd can't do it on his own. They need another scoring option out there. And Quickly's a good scorer. You know, you lose something defensively, but maybe you just gain enough offense that the net result is better. We don't know how good this team can be with a fully functioning Emmanuel Quickly giving you 75% of the games. I want to see that. And if it doesn't happen 2 years in a row, then you have to think, well, maybe it's never going to happen.
I think the best case scenario, as we wrap this up, because we got under 3 minutes, if the Raptors next year are healthy and Brandon Ingram is the third to fourth most important player on the team, if that happens, then that is a win for Bobby Webster and this organization.
Before we go, I just want to give a quick shout out to Ted Turner. I mean, a shout out, I don't know if he was a good guy or not, but he was an important person in the 20th century and very important to the sports world, just passed away at the age of 87. As the owner of the Braves, he was the face of our first great World Series nemesis.
Oh, so good. Yeah.
And as the head of WCW, wrestling was never better than when it was Raw versus Nitro. And that was Ted's organization, WCW, as WWE called him, Billionaire Ted. Mm-hmm. And then finally, you know, he pioneered really cable TV news. And if we've seen anything over the last 25 years of sports, through the growth of TSN and Sportsnet and ESPN and everything, cable news has made sports even more tribal and probably a lot more fun, because you can get it 24/7.
The tentacles of Ted on Ted Turner on everything, on sports, on TV, on news, is remarkable. Yes, I'm glad you brought that up. Oh, and Bob, boo.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.